Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host and CEO and founder of Growth Focus Partnerships, where we take experts within the field of tech and turn them into authorities so that their conversations turn into clients and their insights turn into pipeline. I can't wait to get started on this particular episode today. We have such a great guest. I can't wait to get into how he did what he did, how he built what he did, and no doubt you're going to enjoy it too. So without further ado, let's jump straight into it. Paul, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself? Why don't you tell us who you are and what is it that you do?
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me, Gary. Excited to be here. Yeah, name's Paul Gravy. Last name's pronounced Gravy, just like the sauce. And ever since kindergarten, everybody's just called me Gravy. So I just kind of go by Gravy most of the time. And that's my book name and everything, Data Coach Gravy. But I own a company called The Data Group, and we focus on solving data problems.
All right, fantastic. So as I said, I can't wait to delve into what is it that you actually do. But before we do that, you founded multiple companies over the last three decades. Can you take us back to how it all started and what led you to data?
Yeah, how it all started goes back to my dad. He was born and raised as an Iowa farm boy. And so he was going to teach me character and hard work if it killed me, you know. And so I never had a summer break or a spring break or winter break. No breaks were allowed. In between school, he found me what he liked to call character building opportunities, which were jobs that nobody wanted to do in order to build that character and teach me hard work. And so it wasn't until college, and I was studying finance at Auburn, and I begged him, you know, to get me some sort of semblance of a white collar job instead of shoveling, you know, smelly stuff. And so he did. He got me a job working in the office of a construction company. And the CFO didn't, you know, the only reason they hired me is because my dad was a commercial real estate developer and they thought they could get some construction projects. So he didn't know what to do with me. He gave me a bunch of spreadsheets to do. And I went down to my hole in the wall. It was just like out of Office Space where they sent me to the basement. And I finished the spreadsheets in one day. And he was like, "Oh, wow, you're amazing. You belong in the IT department." And I didn't know what IT was. So I spent a month. The CTO asked me to figure out how to build a database and gave me a book. That's when I figured out I had a knack for databases and data, because a month later, they offered me a full-time job. And so I talked him into letting me take my computer back to college, and I built databases for them out of my college apartment. And that started my now 30-year career in data. And I've started 7, 8, or 9 companies over those 30 years, all about data. Some of them partnerships, some of them venture capital. I've done all of the, different things, bootstrapping to venture capital and partnerships, everything in between. So learned a lot and had a lot of fun. And didn't know I was going to love data, but I do love data. I love everything about it. And we have a lot of fun. Me and my core team have been together for about 20 years building different data companies.
Well, I'm going to talk about your team and the leadership a little bit later on. But for those who, I mean, you've had such a rich career, obviously, and you still have this passion for it. It comes across very, very obviously on camera here. But for those that have not heard of the Data Group, could you give us a little bit more insight into what the Data Group does, who does it serve, and what problem does it solve?
Yeah, so again, I had the same core team for about 20 years. We've been through several different iterations of what is now the Data Group, and we've tried different things along the way. You know, that's what you do. You're always trying to figure out. And we finally have settled in on our gifting. You know, you got to find your hedgehog, as the book says. And it's just staying in the back end. Me and my team were really, really good at the data. The other companies, we tried to do different things like dashboarding and analytics. And we even tried to build some software and some front ends and all those different things. And it just didn't click. That's not our gifting. That's not our strength. And so when we rebranded and formed the Data Group 3.5 years ago, we named it the Data Group, and because I'm the idea guy and I've always got ideas. I'm like, let's build this, let's build that. And one of my partners, you know, who's been with me for 20 years, he's like, maybe if we name it the Data Group, you won't get out of your lane. You'll stay in the data lane, and you won't. So that was his idea, to keep me in the lane of we're not going to do anything else but data. So We build data warehouses, we build data integrations, we build APIs, and we have platforms to help us do all those things very quickly and very efficiently. So, you know, what we like to say is to CEOs is, hey, you've got data problems and we've got data solutions.
Yeah, nice and simple. There is a value to staying in your lane, isn't there? Staying in your lane, only swim your lane. Yes, you can swim. Yes, you can swim in the pool. And there'll be people watching this and listening to it and go, but I'm in the tech pool. All right, and I can do this and I can do that and I can swim to one corner to the other corner. But the value really is choosing your swim lane, dedicating yourself to the swim lane. And what a great story of the partner going, look, we're going to call it this so you can stay on track. You know, don't be, oh, shiny corner. Let me go to that corner. Let's go and do that.
Right. I mean, it happens all the time. I'll take my walks where I get my ideas and I'm like, oh, we should do this. And I'm like, oh, we're the data group. Can't do that. So it works. It keeps me.
Obviously it does. And the more you say it, the more bing. Yeah, that's it. Muscle memory. What I'd like to talk to now, really, is you mentioned a team has been through with you for several years, through several iterations. What's the secret to building a team that's loyal and long lasting?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned all that from John Maxwell. He's the master leadership guru, and I love him and love being a part of his organization. You know, he taught me everything about the old saying, you know, people don't care how much you know once they know how much you care. It's just about loving your people, caring about your people, being intentional about spending time, not just talking about business. And that's hard for us as leaders because, you know, we're driven, we're goal-oriented, we want to accomplish and we want to get through meetings as fast as possible and get them done. And you have to be real intentional about pausing and saying, hey, you know, what's going on in your life? What's going on in your family? And that is super hard for me. I have to be very intentional about it because I just want to move forward all the time. So I think you just have to show them that you love them, that you care, talk about what's going on in their life, what's going on in their family, and don't just do it genuinely. Do it because you actually do love and care about your people. And then I love to just pay them more than they're worth. I mean, it's not the best, you know, you get a lot of investors who would say, no, that's a terrible idea. But, you know, if you show your people that you love them and you pay them well and you listen to them and you take in their ideas, you let them be a part of shaping where you're going. You know, as leaders, all we're really supposed to do is set the vision. And, you know, when you got the vision out there and they buy into that, then that's all you need them to buy into. And then what you want to do is listen to their ideas on how to accomplish that vision. And so I think, you know, you cast the vision, you get them behind the vision, and then you love them, you pay them well, and you listen to them. And then they're involved, they're paid well, and they know you love them and their families. They're not going anywhere.
No, that's a really, really good point there. Well, several really good points in there. And I've been a great advocate for 20, 30 years now of sharing that vision. There are leaders out there who give them an idea, but they share the vision, but they're not getting the buy-in. What you said there earlier was absolutely key, where it was, you got to get them to buy in the vision. Just because it's your vision and you've shared it, if they haven't bought into it, then it's not their vision, it's yours. And once they buy into the vision, it becomes theirs. And then you're all rowing the boat to the same destination. And that's the key. You don't want anyone off the boat. But I do have a question for you. And I can actually even almost hear people asking this question who are viewing this around, you know, shouting at the screen. Yeah, but, you know, what about the theory of don't get too close to your team? Don't get too close to your staff. Keep that authority. What's your view and insights on that?
Hogwash. Get close, get intimate, get to know your people, go over to their house, invite them over, go to the hospital when they have a baby, be a part of their family. I just think that's all hogwash. The more you show them you love them, the more loyal they're going to be, the harder they're going to work, the more they're going to be part of the team, the harder they're going to row the boat, using your analogy. I would just say that's all bonk, and that's a bunch of, I don't know, Harvard MBA nonsense.
Yeah, and I think that is the actual key. It's for, because anyone who has led a real great team and had that team with them knows that what's written for the page isn't really written for real life. And when you have to deal with that and they become friends, just because you're friends with them doesn't mean you've lost control. It doesn't mean you've lost the leadership value. And I think those who write this stuff and go, yeah, but if you're friends, you're not the leader anymore. No, that's not how it is.
I think you're actually a better leader when you're a friend because you bring down the barriers, you bring down the walls, you make them feel at ease giving ideas and being a part of the conversation. They don't feel like they always have to say the right perfect thing. Like they always have to agree with you. Last thing you want is your team to feel like they always got to agree with whatever you say. They're not going to bring any new fresh ideas to the table. You know, there's a whole thing around framing questions. And I love the way Craig Rochelle teaches that, the way you ask open-ended questions and you start with like how instead of do. And I use the example with data. You don't ever want to ask, do we have any data, when you're trying to make a decision, because then it's just a yes, no. No, we don't have any data. But if you say, could we look for some data that might help us make that decision? Then it's like, there's not just a yes, no answer. It's like, could we go look? Okay, well, yeah, we'll go look for some data. So now you've got them, you know. So it's all about, you want them engaged. And if they don't feel like they're your friend, then then you're a boss and they're just trying to be robots and say the right thing and do the right thing and not get into trouble. So building that real relationship is key to having a real, genuine, authentic team behind you.
Yeah, absolute common sense. But as we know, common sense isn't always common practice, is it? And it makes absolute sense to have them. And as I said, I'm an absolute advocate like you and built my team. And we're still friends today, even though we sold the company 10 years ago, still great friends today. So let's talk about standing out there in the marketplace. How do you differentiate yourself in such a crowded and noisy tech ecosystem where everyone claims to be experts, everyone claims to be, we do data, you know? How do you make yourself stand out?
Yeah, well, that's easy. First, it's our hedgehog. We do data and we don't do anything else. So we're not going to help you develop dashboards or systems or portals. We're going to support the companies or people that are doing that for you from the data perspective, from APIs and data warehousing and databases. So staying in our lane, this is our focus. So we're really good at it. We know exactly what we're doing. That's the first differentiator. The second differentiator is we're not selling a product. We're not selling a platform that you buy and then you got to figure it out. We're not selling you like, you buy this platform and then you load your data into your data warehouse and good luck with that and call us if you got questions. We're selling you need a data warehouse or you need an API or you need this data problem solved. We've got that for you. You go back and focus on your business, leading your company, and your API is going to be done for you, or your data warehouse is going to be done for you. So we're just full service enterprise level data company that solves problems, builds databases, it builds data warehouses, builds APIs. And it's like, you know, we take care of it. We're not selling you something where you and your team got to go figure that out. We're saying we've got that handled for you. You can take that off your plate. We're going to build your API. We're going to build your data warehouse. We're going to solve that data problem for you.
Yeah. Where we've seen success amongst tech companies today is not those who are selling a product or selling a service, like you said, but almost like hybrid partners to them. You're helping your client grow so they can grow their business. You're helping them do what they do best, like you said there. And that's where just being there and helping them achieve their dreams and their goals and their figures is when you start getting loyalty from that. And that's such a key thing. And, you know, especially in today's day and age, that those that we see who are struggling are the ones trying to just say, hey, we got the best product. Hey, we got the best thing. This is it. You should buy this because you need it, right? Very good point there. So let's talk about pulling levers and growing a company. You've had several iterations, several companies. You've gone from bootstrap to seven figures. To get to that level, there's lots of levers you've got to pull as a boss. There's lots of levers you've got to pull as a leader. When it comes to the lead generation, to get people to say, hey, yeah, I want to have a chat with you. What would you say has worked really best for you when it comes to lead generation?
That's hard because there's not any real one. I haven't found that there's any one real lever that works best. You have to use all the different levers and you have to use them consistently over a long period of time. And especially in our business at the enterprise level, you know, it's not a $300 a month, put your credit card down and subscribe. It's more of a relationship business and you've got to get to know the CEO, build a relationship. It's kind of like the team, you know, you've got to build a relationship. You got to let them know who you are and let them know they can trust you, be open and honest and transparent and build that relationship. And that takes time. And how those relationships start, you know, it can be any number of ways. They come on your website and they reach out, you meet them at a conference and you start building a relationship. Sometimes, you know, you meet them on the airplane on the way to the, you know, so you just, but it's all about meeting people, getting out there and shaking hands. And, you know, very few, well, I shouldn't say that. We do get a lot of leads through the internet and through just marketing, but a lot of the leads are just getting out there and shaking hands and meeting people and sitting down over coffee or dinner or those sort of things and just building. Even the ones that come in from the internet, I still love to, if possible, you know, get on a plane, go see them, sit down in their office, get to know their goals, get to know what they're trying to accomplish as a company and how data can help them in those efforts. Because that's where our real value is. We're not a platform that we're selling you. We're a relationship. We want to know what your goals are and how data can help you reach those goals.
No, absolutely. And we're hearing this more and more and more in almost every episode that we've done. One of the key words that come out is relationships. But this is the key thing. Everyone knows they should be building more relationships, but very few people are actually doing it properly. You know, they just can't wait to jump in, to do a sale, to do a pitch, whatever. For those who are listening here who are probably struggling with that, what insights could you share with people about how to really start forming good relationships and why they should do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just such a proliferation of SaaS platforms, and everybody's trying to sell just a platform out there where you get a credit card and subscribe. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of companies that need to maybe shift from that thinking into more of an enterprise level relationship sort of business and selling solutions versus selling tools and platforms. But yeah, I think that's the mindset. If you have this mindset of, you know, we're not a platform, we're not selling a product, we're selling solutions and relationship, then that's a mindset shift, right? And then you say, all right, now, you know, I don't need to just be out there marketing and selling Google ad, you know, buying Google. I need to be getting to conferences, meeting people, sitting down in people's offices. I just think that's, so you got to decide. I mean, there's a lot of companies that are very successful just being platform companies and selling subscriptions. So I don't want to knock that. There's people that they enjoy doing that and they're good at that and they're successful doing that. But at the enterprise level, you know, if you're going to sell big clients and solve big problems and big solutions, that is a relationship business because there's big dollars involved. They have to know you and they have to trust you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the tech tends to fall into it. It's what tech is, especially one of those industries that which fall into what I call the field of dreams mentality. It's like, oh, this is so cool. This is so good. I build it and they will come. You hear that over and over and over again. This is so great. It's going to fly off the shelves. This is where it's going to work. And they just wonder why it doesn't work, because everyone else is doing it. And like you just said there earlier, there are so many SaaS every single day. I wish I had the stat for it. How many SaaS products come onto the market on a daily basis, which just makes it noisier, more confusing. And without that relationship, that's the platform, isn't it? That is the foundation, is the relationship.
It is. And building trust and transparency in those relationships is the key. And as one of my mentors, Pastor Chris Hodges, says, you know, it takes years to build trust, and only one decision or one second to destroy it all. So, you know, you've got to dig in every day and build it and build it and build it. And then, you know, you got to have character and values, and because, you know, one bad decision can wreck it all. And so that's, you know, you got to stay focused on who you are and what you're doing, and love your customers. You know, I talk about loving my team. You got to love your customers the same way. You know, build relationship with them, love them, care about their goals, what they're trying to accomplish. If you care more about your customers' goals and what they're trying to accomplish, your business will, you know, you don't have to worry about your company's goals, worry about their goals and try to help them solve their problems. It'll work for your business just as good or better when you're focused on building relationship with them and really solving their problems, helping them accomplish their goals. That's the best, you know, if you want to go back to lead generation, there's the best lead generation is very happy, thrilled customers who know you, trust you, go out there and say, I've been working with Gravy for 10 years. He's honest. He's authentic. He's genuine. He does what he says he's going to do. He delivers. You can't beat that. And you're not going to get any Google ad that's going to sell the way that will sell for you.
You know, and that's such a good point. We hear this all the time in the industry, you know, whether I'm speaking to prospects or whether I'm speaking to guests or whatever, it is constantly, oh, it's so hard to build trust out there, as if trust can be bought in an instant and trust to issue it. But it does take time. There are things you need to do prior to that trust. You know, there's a reason why it's called know, like, and trust, and trust is at the end. You've got to put the work in to get to that. So being said, and we're talking about trust, what role do you feel founder-led marketing plays in business today? Being the face out there, the founder being the face, making sure that you're the one that they know are out there to help them with their goals and their challenges and helps them get their outcome.
Yeah, you just have to. I mean, that's the whole thing for my latest Data Coach Gravy is I'm trying to be a coach to these CEOs and help them understand. First of all, most CEOs have bought into a lie that they do not understand data and it's too complicated. And I'm not sure why this is, because data is so simple. It's strings, dates, and numbers. I mean, it could not be any more simple. And I think IT has sold them this lie and they've bought into it. And then that leads them to outsource the leadership of their technology and their data. And they just kind of leave the IT department over there. You do your thing. But they're leading every other department. They have no problem leading other departments that they don't understand anything about. And so it's curious to me. So what I try to do in building that relationship is just come in and say, hey, listen, you know, your data, first of all, is your most valuable asset. It's the only completely unbiased truth about your company, because you have biases, your board has biases, all the leaders around you have biases, your data doesn't. And it's the only complete and totally unbiased truth. And until you have total visibility into it, you know, you're leading off of assumptions and biases and, you know, just experience. And what you want to do is get to the cold, hard truth. And when you present, like, just example, as your board might be telling you one thing when they have no data, and then you get visibility into your data and the cold, hard truth about your company, your board's probably going to give you totally different direction, because they now understand the whole truth. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is help CEOs look, your data is your most valuable asset. It's the truth about your business. Right now, it's a scattered mess, probably in 25 to 50 different systems. You have no visibility into it. You're living in a place called spreadsheet hell. And they all know, they're like, yeah, I know. That's exactly where we're living. And so just try to build like, hey, I can relate. I know where you are and it's a problem. And here's how we solve it. And we solve it by getting all your data in a wholly owned data warehouse. Now you own it. Now you control it. And there's so many benefits of that, you know, better decisions, total visibility, the truth, unbiased, and valuation. I mean, let's say you're trying to sell the company and they're looking at four different companies and you and all those other four companies, their data is a scattered mess in 50 different systems, but yours is, and you can give them answer after answer, report after report to all of their questions because you wholly own and control your data. Guess which company they're going to buy for a very high valuation. So there's so many benefits to, hey, data is simple, own it, control it, and let's solve these problems with total visibility into the truth about our company. And so that really resonates, that builds trust, that builds relationship. They understand what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to solve for them, how I'm trying to help them. So that's really what I'm trying to do as Data Coach Gravy and being a data coach.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. And I'll, you know, it's been very, very apparent. You know, I've been talking to, a very good friend of mine is in the data field as well, very successful guy. And we're talking about first-party data. First-party data is like a currency. We run third-party data using first-party. It is yours, wholly owned. This is where the value is, like you just said, when it comes to the value of a company. How are you getting that measures out? Because obviously this is a conversation you can have once you're in front of somebody and go, yeah, this is how it should be. This is how the increase the value. But how does Coach Gravy get out there and say, hey, this is how we need to educate the marketplace. This is what I want you to learn. This is what you need to learn. This is how easy it can be. How are you actually doing that?
I'm doing that on the Gary Lafferty podcast. Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing podcasts. I wrote a book called Data Driven Leader that comes out next month. I'm really excited about that. I do speaking opportunities at companies and conferences. So yeah, that's how I get the message out. We're starting a new LinkedIn strategy where we're going to start doing a video a day on LinkedIn. So we're trying different things. It's like you said earlier, I mean, it's such a noisy marketplace and everybody's screaming about their SaaS platform. So we're trying to be really targeted and focused on the few places that we think where our message will really reach the right people and resonate. You know, I'm really trying to reach CEOs because the big problem is they're outsourcing the leadership of their data. And I want them to take ownership and leadership over their data and cast the vision for it and how they can really use it to effectively prepare their company for the future. Data is the future of everything. AI runs on data. So when you want to future-proof your company, You've got to lead your data and the mission and the vision for your data. And so that's the message. And I think it's really resonating. And so we're just being really selective about the channels that we're using to get that message out. But I think, yeah, speaking, hopefully the book is going to be great. I love it. I'm really excited about it. I spent a year and a half writing it, put a lot of effort into it. It is zero AI written. It is totally gravy written. Every single word is genuine and authentic. And I hope it speaks to CEOs. I really think there's this enormous problem where CEOs are not leading their data. They're outsourcing that, and they need to take ownership and leadership over it and lead their data, because it is the future of everything.
No, absolutely. And I can, it's very obvious, as I said, the passion you have for the ownership of the data. But one of the challenges that CEOs are having, you mentioned earlier that you said, they've been led to believe this lie that it's hard, it's difficult, it's something they cannot do. If there was one myth that you wanted to bust with CEOs and when it comes to data, what would that one myth be that would help them loose from the shackles that holds them back?
Yeah, it's what I said. I think they bought into a lie that it's too complicated and they don't understand it. And that leads them to the second lie, which is, because I don't understand it, I'm not qualified to lead it. And it's like, well, wait a minute. The example I use is, does the CEO of a power company understand how a nuclear reactor works? No. But does he lead the nuclear reactor division of his company? He absolutely does. He casts the vision for where they need to go, and he leads them on that vision. You don't need to understand how a database, an API, and a data warehouse work to lead your data. Stop the lie that because I don't really understand this stuff, I'm not qualified to lead it. You're absolutely qualified to lead it, because you understand the value of what owning and controlling and be able to effectively use your data means for your company, right? And so that's the vision. Look, this is our most valuable asset. This is the truth about our company. This is the future of our company. If we want to effectively use AI, we need to own and control all of our data. It needs to be clean, and it needs to be ready to feed into whatever AI solutions we want to buy into. You know, that's the vision, is our data is critically important. It's our most valuable asset. So the vision is, we need to own and control it. And it is hard, just from a standpoint of, because your data is so scattered. You know, big companies have 25 to 50 different systems that this data is scattered in. So that's the hard lift. But if you set the vision, you know, we are going to do this, everything is uphill, right? It's hard. But you set the vision, you set the mission, we are going to own and control all of our data, and you lead them on that mission, and you endeavor to persevere, and you get it done. Can be, most companies, the reason they don't get done is they give up too easily. You know, they give up too quickly. And you got to endeavor to persevere, get the data from all those different systems, get it into a data warehouse, and now you've built the foundation for the future of your business.
Yeah, and that's such a key thing when you were just listening to you there. About something came to mind. I'm actually moderating with a client of mine a webinar later on this week on AI security in the enterprise world. And one of the key things we're talking about there is the cleanliness of your data, because you need to have clean data before you let AI loose on it, because AI can only deal with what you give it.
Yes. Right?
And then all the flaws, it's like compounding. You put rubbish in, you're going to get absolute rubbish coming out of it. And yeah, this is about the cleanliness of the data. So when you just mentioned that, it made me smile. I go, hang on, that's exactly what we're talking about later on this week.
Yeah, and it's funny.
Have you got any comments on that? Because there's a lot of enterprise companies coming in, especially, it doesn't really matter where they're at. There's an AI element to it. They want to install AI. They're looking to put that in. There's the challenges of that. If they don't have their own data, they don't have clean data, there's going to be a challenge. What insights can you share with that?
Yeah, I love what you said. You said rubbish in, rubbish out, garbage in, garbage out. They used to talk about that all the time in the 80s and 90s and 2000s before AI. They were always talking about, you got to get your data clean, garbage in, garbage out. Now nobody's talking about that because they don't care. They just want to do AI and we'll just feed garbage into it. It's like, no, like, what are you doing? Like, you've got to get your data prepared. So I love what you're saying. It's absolutely right that AI runs on data. And if you feed garbage into AI, just like back in the 80s, you're going to get garbage analytics. You're going to get garbage results. So, and in order to have clean data, in order to get your data prepared, you have to have total visibility into it. And you can't have total visibility into it if it's scattered in 25 different systems. So again, the first key is get into a data warehouse, put a visibility tool over it. We love Sigma Computing. They have an amazing visibility tool. We're partners with Snowflake. They're the best data warehouse on the market. We're partners with Sigma. They're the best data visibility tool on the market. And see your data. Because when you see it, most of our customers, the first time they see their data, they go, that's not our data. And I'm like, oh, sadly and unfortunately, yes, it actually is. But the good news is now we can see the problem. We can see it totally clearly. And now we can, before you even know, you had this enormous data problem. And you're not ever going to know it until you can see it. So you've got to get in a warehouse. You got to put a visibility tool over it. Now we can see it. Now we clean it. Now we can fix it. Now we can enrich it. We can add other data to it to make it even more valuable. And now we've laid the foundation for the future. We've laid the foundation for AI, and we can do something positive with it. There are AI tools out there that you can implement today, and that's fine, and they're good. But all your competitors are doing that too, right? So you've created no competitive advantage. The only way to create a competitive advantage with AI is to use AI with your data, right? Because your competition's using publicly available AI and publicly available data and publicly available tools. But when you get your data and you get it clean so that it's valuable, and then you plug that into AI, now you've created a true competitive advantage because you're using your data with AI and your competition is not.
Yeah, and that is a brilliant insight to end our conversation. I can't believe where the time has gone today, Gary. It's just flown by, having so much fun. So if people want to get hold of you, potentially work with you or get to know more about what you do, what's the best way they can do that?
Our website, thedatagroup.cloud, or you can email me at gravy@thedatagroup.com. And you can either spell it the correct way my last name is spelled, or you can spell it like the sauce. Either way, I'll get the email. And I'd be happy to talk to you about data and how we can help you effectively use it to meet your goals. So thanks for having me. It's been fun. I can talk about data way too long.
No, not at all. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here today. Yeah, and thank you for sharing your insights and your expertise. I'm sure the listeners and the viewers have got an awful lot out of it today.
Great. Thanks, Gary. Really appreciate the time.
Not at all. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. If you've taken anything from Gravy today, please make sure you like it, make sure you comment it. But more important, please make sure you share. We grow and we learn by standing on the shoulders of giants, learning from other leaders amongst in the field. So please make sure that you share the episode or share other episodes so that we can all grow together. But more importantly, please make sure that you are striving, you are growing your business. Please make sure you're profitable. So until the next episode, we shall see you soon. Bye-bye.